This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
I had the honor of leading a conversation with Toby Ajala and Yasmina Kone at this year's Black Tech Fest, a virtual three-day festival to celebrate Black culture, showcase innovation, and create pathways for underrepresented talent. Toby Ajala is the founder of TechTeep, a complete lifecycle digital agency that specializes in software development and design within fashion and luxury industries. And Yasmina Kone is senior partnerships manager at Beam, the world's first crowdfunding platform for homeless people. Together, we explore navigating and excelling within industries that can be inhospitable to Black women, addressing and redressing some of the barriers that prevent those experiencing homelessness from re-entering the job market, challenging assumptions that we all have equal access to technology and therefore equal access to opportunities, and their advice to young Black people who see a world they want to help change. I'm Josh Rivers, and I'm busy being Black with Toby Ajala and Yasmina Kone at Black Tech Fest 2021. Toby, Yasmina, thank you so much for being here. On Busy Being Black, I like to open our conversations by asking my guests the same question. How is your heart? And Toby, I'm gonna start with you.
I love this question, I really do. So in all honesty, it's a bit tired. It's been a very long couple of years, my heart is also very grateful. And very joyful at the same time. So a little bit of a mixed bag, but on the brighter side in general.
I love that. And Yasmina, for you, how's your heart?
Oh, what a lovely question. Do you know, I would say it's good. Similarly, I think, you know, the pandemic, a lot of the things that have been going on in society have been weighing a little heavy, but feeling quite fulfilled at the space I'm creating for myself, with my friends, with my loved ones and my family. So that's helping to replenish some of the things that are bringing it down a little. So yeah, good.
I love that. I think we shall ask ourselves more how our hearts are. Yasmina, tell us a bit more about the work of Beam and maybe particularly its necessity in this current moment we're inhabiting together.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, this conversation is all about how technology can be a part of creating, driving social good. So really delighted to be able to talk about Beam today. So Beam, as you said, is the world's first crowdfunding platform. And our purpose is to remove the financial barriers that are stopping people.
It's the world's first crowdfunding platform for homeless people.
For homeless people, yeah. For people who are experiencing homelessness or at risk of homelessness. And one of the things that people will often think when they think about homelessness is they'll think about the about 3% of people who are rough sleepers. But actually the other 97% of people who are classed as homeless or at risk of homelessness are in some form of hidden homelessness. So they will perhaps be in temporary accommodation with their local council, or they will be staying in a bed and breakfast or a hostel, or they'll be in arrears with rent. So when you think about homelessness, you tend to think about actually a very small proportion of the people who are impacted. And so we are working with all of the people who are impacted by homelessness to remove those financial barriers. We do that by creating a personalized plan for each individual that we help, and then creating a campaign. The campaign, anyone can see, if you go to beam.org, you'll see all of the live campaigns of people who are fundraising at the moment. And there you can read a breakdown of exactly what it is that we're fundraising for. Typically, it will be things which will come onto, like laptops, internet dongles, childcare, perhaps first month of rent. And all of those things will be funded by the public. So anyone can go on and say, right, I'm going to pledge £20 today towards X person's campaign. At that point, this is where the team that I work within comes into play. We are brokering relationships with employers who then want to hire the wonderful candidates that we are working with and diversify the cohorts of people that they are hiring. So yeah, working with some exceptional employers on that, and that's the angle I'll come at this conversation today.
I love that. And I homeless, do you have any indication of the ethnicity or background of your of those you're campaigning for?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a really fantastic question. So nearly 65% of the people that we work with are from Black and minority ethnic backgrounds. And actually, last year in October 2020, the government produced a report that said that Black people were three times more at risk of being homeless. And that's because when you look at homelessness, it is very rooted in systemic inequality and therefore impacts the most marginalized and vulnerable communities to the highest degree. And so, yeah, the majority of people that we're working with are from ethnic minority backgrounds and other marginalized communities. So that's particularly why the work that we're doing is really important to me and many of the people that I work with.
And it's worth reminding us all the recently released Sewell report, which completely disavowed institutional racism or structural racism in this country. But as you're saying, there's a real impact on the lives of Black and brown people in this country. Toby, coming over to you, Tech Tea works with some really big name clients, including Gucci. What does Tech Tea help companies you work with to do or to achieve?
So the idea is we produce technology in all forms, from the most deep-rooted technology within banking and finance and kind of like really big technical, dorky based projects. But then we do some really light, fun and creative projects as well. The campaign stuff we do with Gucci, La Perla, Marks and Spencer, like really big, fun names that people get to interact with, e-commerce platforms, campaigns, marketing pieces, all of that really fun stuff. But the idea was always to create that because that's the stuff that I loved doing. I still love doing it. But after a while within the business, it was very evident that a lot of people were oblivious. They still are in this business. And I think we've all seen it. A marketing campaign or an advert comes out or a product comes out. And it's like, who allowed this outside? Do you know?
Yeah,
and
it,
exactly. Yeah. And there are so many steps at which point, to the point in where it comes out, it's released to the public, and it still missed the mark in a very big way. I work towards the end of that life cycle where companies have already thought up a plan, or a lot of the time they also call me and people on my team to think up a plan because they have a product or they have an idea. And it's originally our job to come in and flesh out that idea in a digital sense. But in actual fact, I've found the last couple of years have really just been us actually saying, hold on a second. Does that actually make sense for if I was a Black person, if I was an Asian person, how would I feel about this particular product? For example, there was a campaign that we did last year, Christmas, and it was going worldwide, but they were advertising specific products that didn't fare well in certain parts of the world. Certain parts of the world don't drink alcohol, certain parts of the world don't eat pork. And what you want to do is go and put a piece of ham and a glass of wine right on the homepage in these areas. It's offensive, it's not sensitive to their needs, what they find important. So thinking about those things, from a digital point of view, a lot of the time people don't think they don't think that far, or they don't think that wide, but in actual fact, it's very, very important to consider lots of elements when you're building digital products. So not only do we provide exceptional digital services, we also provide conscious digital services. And I think that's the one thing that does set us apart, because all of those other products that you've seen come out and we always wonder what happened there, who stamped that for approval, are also other agencies, but they miss the mark by not having diverse people on their team.
I want to throw the conversation out the window. I want to pick you up on conscious
Because I think that's a really, it just, you said it and I went, oh my God, of course, what a much better way to talk about diversity, inclusion, thoughtfulness in a digital space because of the context of this conversation, but also what you're doing is conscious too, right? Like these conscious digital interventions, this use of tech very consciously feels very appropriate. And you also have a conscious approach in other ways too, right? I'm thinking about the laptops.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So one of the things, especially during the pandemic, that I realized was I've been a big techie my entire life. But when I was starting at the beginning of everything, I was raised by a single mother. And I have two other siblings, one single mother, one paycheck, three children, four people that all need laptops. As you can imagine, it didn't happen. I was lucky enough to receive a laptop from my dad, but after a couple of years, it started to fall apart simply because it just wasn't a good quality one. Back then, a lot of computers and laptops weren't, they were made quickly. I had to work in the Apple store to be able to afford a MacBook. With an employee discount that allowed me to have a laptop that I then used to build my business with. I still use it. It's my, wow. It's my business laptop. But in that, it made me open my eyes a little bit to the fact that people don't have laptops in 2020. So this was originally, it's called a Tech T laptop or Tech T device scheme. And how it works is the clients we work with, we literally ask at the end of a really cool project when they're really happy with us. When they're really happy with us and they're like, we love this and it's launched and everyone's happy. I kind of say, hey, have you got any spare devices that you don't use? I've never asked that question and received a no. Wow. It's always a yes. Big corporations have a lot of capability to provide, even if it's one or two or three. And that's what happens. Companies say, yeah, we have a couple we can give you, whether used or new. We take them and then we give them to students from creative and technical backgrounds, well, in creative and technical courses to utilize because they don't have one of their own. I'm talking about university students at really kind of prestigious universities doing things like mathematics, medical students, and they are going to the library to use the devices there because they can't afford their own because everything is so expensive. Yeah. So if that is a small way in which we can contribute to society in a greater way, I'm very happy to do such.
And can people watching contribute to the Tech T device scheme?
Absolutely. I think one of the things is, so 2018, it started in 2018 when I asked, just by chance, I received two laptops. 2019, I received eight. 2020, I received none. I didn't ask. The pandemic was up and down. It was a terrible time for a lot of people. So a lot of companies were scrambling. So we didn't get any. We didn't even run the scheme at the time. January 2021 changed the game. As of July, I think we had 187 that we'd just between January and July of 2021 alone. One of the things I specifically say is we haven't yet. So we're currently in talks of doing all sorts of things, but we haven't taken money. We've literally taken devices, laptops or tablets, either repaired them or if they were brand new, just give them. We just give them to students who need them, and that's it.
The thing I keep thinking about in this conversation about technology is, one, the assumption that everyone has equal access to technology, which I think many of us can take for granted.
Absolutely.
And the second is that organizations or people working within organizations, as I assume many are who are watching, actually might have access to something that, I mean, that could help, right? 187 lives changed in 7 months.
Just
through the donation of devices.
And that's just me asking, literally, just when I see. And it originally started by, I was at a client's office, huge offices. And if you just imagine, it was about 100 meters worth of a walkway. It was kind of like a bridge between the two sides of their buildings. And there was racks of computers. No one was touching them. And I walked by them day after day after day of presenting back and working with them. And I said, these things are literally dust.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask.
Yeah.
And I'm yet to get a no. So I'm happy to keep doing it. Yeah. And I'm asking again.
Open your purse. Open your tech store cupboard. Each of you have taken a very different approach to your careers and to a relationship with the utility of technology. Yasmina, your focus on recruitment and on technologies that enable broader diversity in hiring result in measurably more diverse teams. And Toby, I think yours is a more of a Robin Hood approach, you know, taking from these big corporates and giving to those who need them. Yasmina, I'll start with you. How has your lived experience informed your approach to what I would consider a people-centered technology?
That's a fantastic question, and there's sort of one clear example for me that comes to mind. So one of the first things I worked on actually when I was out of university, my first job was at an organization called Rare, and they mainstream the use of contextual recruitment. So contextual recruitment is when you understand someone's grades and achievements in the context in which they were achieved. For example, and I'm a real case study of this, which is why it made sense for me to work on the project and then go out and talk to clients about it. So I got 2 A stars and a B from a school where the average was at the time C and 2 Ds. So I outperformed by X percent. And what that meant is that for any recruiter looking at my CV when I then went on to apply to a job, if they just saw, okay, A stars, 1 B though, and if they asked a question about that B, I would not be able to say anything about that. I'm a CV, I'm a faceless thing. It's just they see that. What the contextual recruitment system does, and now it's used by hundreds of organizations at a graduate level for the most part, is say this person outperformed their context and actually they've got various other markers of social mobility. Now, what that means is it correlates really heavily with outperformance in the workplace because you've got that grit, you've got that resilience, you've got that drive. You know how to get what you want and campaign for yourself when perhaps the circumstances aren't as easy as they might otherwise be. And so that for me was like an incredible entry to the working world, to thinking about how technology can be used to open access to employment opportunities. And, you know, this was at a time where a lot of recruiters did look at grades. Now, amazingly, most recruiters have stopped looking at grades, but that context still does so much, because when you think that you're looking at hundreds, sometimes thousands of applications that all kind of look the same, actually look for people's resilience, look for their drive, look for that grit, because those are the things that are going to make a fantastic employee. And so that's how you start to hone in on seeing, you know, some of the things that come out of perhaps being from a lower socioeconomic background. Actually, you see the flip side, which are all the positives and the way that it drives you to be, yeah, really resilient and ambitious.
Wow. I'm thinking now of unconscious bias, and I'm saying that with really big air quotes, because what even is that? But, you know, people make lots of assumptions about ethnic minority, oh, let's not say that here, Black people and people of color in the workplace and at the very nascent beginning of the recruitment process. Does a contextual recruitment help mitigate any of these kind of unconscious biases that people might be harboring?
Fantastic question. Usually you'd have it in tandem with a load of other initiatives, i.e. removing school names, but still having the percentile, for example, of the school, or not having names on CVs at all. So doing CV blind reviewing and then CV blind interviewing. At the firm that I used to work at, they were one of the first organizations to introduce CV blind interviewing in about, I think it was 2013. And what that meant is that an interviewer would turn up on the day, they'd have no preconceptions about a candidate, and then they'd say, cool, Yasmina, I'm interviewing you today. And you start at a level playing field. Now, obviously, that doesn't take into account the fact they can still see you and you're sat in front of them, but then that's where training comes in. Yeah. And so you have to really take, with all D&I initiatives, a multi-layered approach and do what you can at every stage to make sure that you're recognizing potential, not just polish, and assessing people as such.
And but now in the role that you're doing at Beam, you're asking people, you kind of take away all of that, right? Well, as in you add the context within the initiative, right? We're helping or assisting people experiencing homelessness get back on their feet. And so it's quite a different ask, I imagine, of corporate partners, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, the basis is still the same. You want the best talent you can possibly get. And if you look at the context that we're in right now, so at the end of September, there are 1.9 million live job vacancies. And we do not currently, looking at existing talent pools, have the people to fill them. Mm. We are in a recruitment crisis. You have got a need. How are you going to fill those roles? Well, looking in new untapped places is the way to do that. And sometimes you have to get creative. You have to drop some of those preconceptions, and you have to understand that a lot of the time, the reason that people won't be in work is because there are barriers to stop them from getting there. Mm. For example, not having a laptop. Yeah. You know, that is pretty key. If you can't apply for jobs, most people these days have a smartphone. You know, on average, the people that we work with have been out of work for about 5.5 years. So a lot of the work we're doing as well is around, yeah, not only providing access to tech, but upskilling people around digital literacy. Yeah. And one of my colleagues has actually just put together a fantastic session that I saw him reporting on the success of it recently. And it was all about teaching people how to feel confident and comfortable in this new digital world yeah. that they may have felt a little bit out of touch with.
Wow. Yeah.
I have a podcast.
Excuse me, your podcast is exceptional.
Thank you. Toby, you said in an interview that one of the things that has helped you succeed is your authenticity. And I have my own opinions about authenticity, but can you say more about that? You know, how has showing up at, or how have you shown up as yourself in an industry, both tech and fashion, mm-hmm. Which can often be quite inhospitable to Black people, but particularly Black women?
We see a lot of Black women in fashion. Let's not take that away from anything. We even are starting to see some Black women heading up big tech companies and firms. But I was actually on Twitter, I think this was 2 days ago, and it was a pyramid of emojis. And it was using kind of like right at the top would be a white man, male emoji. And then the second layer, which would be kind of like senior VP or vice president. So there'd be one white and one black and usually one black woman. And then the rest, it could be hundreds of people under there would be white. And then the last row would be black and brown, you know, that's where you find the diversity. Right. I sit in terms of seniority, so to speak, right at the top.
Yeah.
Well, along the CEOs, where you see the white males, the white females. And there's two ways in which I see it. And people have at least told me to my face. I'll be at networking events. And one of the things would be, I would be the only black female in the room. And there'll be maybe two other white females and then hundreds of white males. And the thing about it is I go in there and I'm not changing. I'm not forming. I'm not sitting there doing the boys talk. I get on very, very well with talking with white men about digital. And I have mastered it. You know, like I'm so, what do you want to talk about? Let's talk about like Jim, Bill, name the golf, name it, I'm there, right? But there's something very, I think rather unique in the sense that they don't see someone like me at all, ever at this level. So one thing, a marketing company actually found out recently that my company, Tech Tea, is the first black owned, female led digital agency ever in the world to exist. As elated, thank you. As elated as I was, I kind of thought, hold on a second. I'm 28 years old, I'm gonna turn 29. You're telling me nobody has done this before me? Like, not even close, because I know black women in tech, I know a few, and I know it's changed a lot over the last few years, but it's true. When did black women who write code, who are true software developers, get the opportunity to be at certain levels? And for that, it was like a light bulb moment for me. And it was starting to make sense as to why I was this and my company became this. It's just about being authentically me. Mm. And also, because a company I was trying to pitch to, and I won the tender, thank God for that, a couple of weeks ago, literally stared me dead in my eyes. It was the head of digital at the company and said, but why should we pick you? And I said, if I'm going to be very honest, because I'm at the helm of this company, I said, how many people have you, don't have to tell me who they are, but how many agencies have you got on at the moment bidding for this tender? He said 17. I said, you've got to put yourself together at that point. I said, okay, how many of them are of color? And he said, one, it's an Asian man. Okay, I said, no black people? He said, no. I said, how many are women? He said, no. I said, you've got no women. And the thing about bidding for tenders or presenting for tenders is, it's not necessarily the founder that goes in. It could be the head of marketing, or it could be whoever does the business development side. And I said, even in the business development side, not a single woman came to you? He says, no. I said, okay, amongst all these men, white and then the Asian one, how many of them are software developers to build your software product, which is what we're talking about here? And he said, I don't think any of them are. Mm. I said, okay, then that's your answer. That's why you should pick me. And I think it's authentically the fact that I am a developer. I love doing what I do. I'm true to what I do, and I'm honest about it. And in that respect, when you kind of put that in front of people, they start to, if they really want to, because a lot of time they don't, or they don't care. But if they want to think about it just for a moment, they will realize that, oh, hold on a second. Like, where do we see someone at the helm of a company with such great experience, who's a black woman, who can do everything we're looking for, and she's right in front of us.
And who values the work and the client enough to show up herself.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the things people get it all the time. So where do you sit in the company? I said, I'm the founder. And they said, okay, so, and your board? And I said, are you looking for a white man? Cross that true question. You're not gonna say. I have to admit, I have learned a lot from white men about business, about running my business, and I'm not gonna take that away from them. Like, you have to. Some of the best business people, or some of the best people that have had the opportunity to be the best business people, are white men. And if you like, you don't have to learn from them, but if you want to learn quickly, learn fast, and not have to make all the mistakes, you have to learn wherever you can. But the truth of the matter is, there is something special, very special, about who I am. And without sounding really cocky, I'm
you sound like,
but yeah,
sound like a bad thing.
because I work really hard. So there's something very special about bringing a company to life like this, in this way. And then also, there's this element of two in one, being very truthful. I will look at a client and say, it's not a good idea. We'll build it for you. Mm. Put it on record. I said, it's not a good idea. Well, we said it's not a good idea. You're marginalizing this group. You're not including this group. Are you sure you want to put that out? Because if this kind of people see it, it's going to miss, you're going to completely miss the mark there. And that authenticity, that truthfulness, that honesty, because it's one thing to say that you want to satisfy a client's brief or do everything that you're supposed to do. It's one thing to do the job because you have to do the job and you want your invoice paid at the end of the day without saying what needs to be said. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't say it, who will? The employees who are being paid with their salaries on the line? Yeah. No. Yeah. So being authentic and being honest and very transparent, that's one thing I say when I speak to everyone in every respect, in personal life and business. I'm very transparent. I will tell you, I mean, I'm not telling you all my secrets, but if there's something you need to know, absolutely. Mm. And that's how I run my business.
I love that. It's almost like a, you are conscious of your position within this industry that is predominantly white, but you're also not carrying it on your back.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It would be detrimental to me if I carried it on my back. I can't shoulder that responsibility, but I think it's very important to say, listen, this is who I am and this is what I do. I'm very conscious of all of the people around me and what they have to offer, and kudos to them. Some amazing agencies exist, but there is something very special about ours, and being able to just acknowledge that and appreciate that is all I'm asking. Mm. And if you don't want to, that's okay too, because we'll still keep going.
Yeah, racist.
Yeah. Busy Being Black will return in just a moment.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
I'm Josh Rivers, and you're listening to Busy Being Black. I'm in conversation today with Toby Ajala and Yasmina Kone at Black Tech Fest 2021, and we're exploring how technology can be used to empower, include, and uplift marginalized communities.
We're hearing a lot in the news at the moment about a labor shortage, right? And it's all linked to strawberries and fuel and bacon, I think, or the slaughtering of pigs. But I think that this actually obscures a much more insidious and longer history, I think, which you've alluded to already, but I'd like you to expand on, about what's stopping talented, skilled people getting into work.
Yeah. I mean, that there are a couple of different things. There's obviously the initial thing, which is financial barriers. Now, that plays out in a number of different ways. For example, one of the reasons we've got all of these shortages is because there aren't enough HGV drivers. It costs between £3,000 to £4,000 to fully train and qualify as a HGV driver. So if you don't have the money to do it in the first place, you cannot fill that skills gap. And so a lot of what Beam does through its crowdfunding is funding training to fill skills shortages, which is why, you know, we occupy a really important space for a lot of our employer partners. So financial barriers is a big one. Training is another one. Support networks too. I mean, right. Feeling confident, knowing how to go for an interview, knowing how to address certain questions that are asked to you in an interview, how to draw out your transferable skills. These are all really important things that when you've been out of work for 5.5 years, will knock you from being able to get back into the workplace. And what you need is that personalized support that is tailored to you to help you build what your career plan is going to look like, what financial barriers you need to overcome, and how to get a job as well that makes you more financially stable. Because when you take into account things like childcare, and you mentioned earlier, you know, being the child of a single mother, you know, it's tricky. Like, a lot of the people that we work with will need childcare. And actually, if you don't initially have that job and a paycheck coming in to be able to pay for the childcare in the first place, you know, these are all things that tend to mix together and create quite a difficult environment for people to get into work. Mm-hmm. And those are the barriers that you find for the majority of the people that we work with. So a lot of it, in terms of like using tech then to combat the issues, that's where the crowdfunding comes in, to make sure that we can fund the training that they require, the first month's rent, the childcare, and then providing a support network. So we have an incredible product team, and we've got amazing internal tech and external facing tech. And one of the things that our platform does so beautifully is allow the members of the public, the sponsors, to send messages of encouragement and support to the people who they are donating to their campaign. And I think it's 72% of the people that we interviewed in their closing interviews, where they've got into a job, they're happy, they're stable, said that those messages from the public are some of the most important things that Beam gives them. It's a network, and it's providing, you know, that sort of support that people might not have in other areas of their life. So whilst there's a sort of hardcore financial barriers, there's also just the element that is to do with support, understanding of the careers that you're going into and the options available to you.
Yeah, and the humanness.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that many of us are feeling that, right? That the a lack of, one, a recognition of each other's humanity, but the expression of that humanity too. I'm rooting for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're all rooting for you.
Tyra,
we were rooting for you. I don't think that we have enough time for all the questions I have left. So I'm gonna jump ahead. So many of us all of us in this room and people watching wherever you are still reeling from the events of the past year and a half, from the murders of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd, to the uprisings in support of Black lives, to the deportation of Black people that's happening here consistently in the UK, and a kind of cautious reemergence into some form of new normality. But in the face of these upheavals, in the face of this violence, our communities, specifically Black people, keep finding ways to thrive and support each other and to connect. What stands out for you, Toby, about the ways technology has been harnessed over the past 18 months?
It's very interesting because I feel as though the technology exists, but it's really about the people behind the technology, the companies and the support. Because over, especially with the laptop scheme, seeing how, when I explain to companies, this is why I want some laptops from you, they kind of say, oh, wow, we didn't know. And that idea that, and to be frank, there was a time where it wasn't such a conscious thought to myself as well. So I'm not kind of going into meetings or on calls thinking that these people should know or anything like that. It's more so, I'm glad you now know, let's do something about it. And it doesn't necessarily have to be with me, but it's also, it's very important that it's about the people behind the technology, the people with the access to the technology to be able to share it. I think the use of technology, the TikToks, the tweets, the videos, the ability to share so quickly has changed the game completely. I know Black people, older Black people, who didn't even realize the gravity of racial bias in the UK. I remember speaking to someone very recently who had a financial issue. And they said that they had come across a TikTok that was explaining how people's names were causing, in the UK, were causing banks to offer higher interest rates to them when they wanted to borrow. And he was banking with that bank that was on the TikTok. And he was shocked about it. And he called me and he said, Toby, is the technology allowed to do that? And I said, it's the technology can do anything. Yeah. It's what the people ask the technology to do. Mm. So the technology is fantastic because it can do almost anything. It can do anything. It's about the people behind the technology. But I love how much visibility technology has allowed to give what happens in the world towards Black people. Because even in parts of Asia, we saw racial abuse towards Black people. Not to kind of mark anyone out, but we consistently see how Black people are treated around the world, even in Africa, where they say Black people only exist or should exist or whatever. And technology providing that visibility to me is one of the greatest things of the last 18 months. Mm.
Because there is this assumption that Black people come out of the womb fully formed. Right?
And we know how to deal with racist comments and racial abuse, and we kind of just go about our day not thinking or not feeling like these things don't affect us and we're fine. Where in actual fact, things are happening every day to millions of people, and some people are completely oblivious. So for example, a gentleman I used to work with a very long time ago, but he's a fantastic guy. This is a white man. Well, he's from like the Middle East, but he is very much white presenting. He sent me a message on LinkedIn. We speak now and again, we relate with each other on LinkedIn, but he sent me a message, direct message, right in the middle of the with what was happening with George Floyd, right when the height of people's kind of outrage. And he literally said, Toby, I had no idea. Mm-hmm. He's a lovely man. He is a really amazing man. I really like him and I trust him. And that's one of the key things, especially when it came to work, because I always used to call on him to come and help out. If he needed a contract role or anything like that, I'd call him to join my team for a little bit. And I trust him very much with technology and just to be a nice kind of companion while we work together. And for him to say, I had no idea, made me realize that, goodness gracious, he sees me, he understands how hard it is for me to go out consistently with the nose, the occasional yeses to build this business to where it is, to be able to pay people like him. And he said he didn't have a clue that people like me and even someone like me was going through something like this.
And there's two really affirming points there, right? One is that, to just confirm the point, is that how we use the technology has a direct impact on how other people like us understand our experience.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the funny thing is that example I gave of that gentleman that sent me a message, I said, where is this coming from? And he's got a 14-year-old daughter. And he said, she kept sending me tweets. And I said, there's the technology going again. There you go. He may know how to write technology, but he's not a social media person. And he said, she kept sending me tweets and videos from Twitter. And I didn't know. So now I'm on Twitter. And he told me to follow him. So the technology is working in places, you know.
And he got the hang of it, right?
He got the hang of it very quickly. But it's opened his eyes completely. Mm-hmm. You, even in the way in which he relates with me, it's not changed, but it's become conscious. Even when I didn't even think he needed to change anything, he thought he needed to change anything. And if technology can change that in people, I'm all for it.
I'm not going to ask you the same question, actually. I'm going to skip ahead because I think that you've made it clear. What would you say to a young Black woman a young Black person, let's say, who is looking at the world and sees a world they want to help change? What would you say to them?
That is a very profound question. I think I would say, think about where your strengths lie. What are your superpowers? What are you interested in and what are you passionate about? And find a way to create change through those means. So, you know, with me, it's very clear how I can create change, because it's interesting you mentioned changing lives earlier. That is literally the metric that defines Beam. It's our key KPI. How many lives have we changed this week, this month, this year? So for me, it's quite obvious. I do it through creating employment opportunities. But Toby, you do it through changing lives by giving people technology and access to it because you love being a software developer. You are a fantastic interviewer who wants to platform people within the Black and specifically queer community. So each of us are an example of how you can take what you're passionate about, what your skills are, and channel that into creating change. So that's my advice. Figure out what it is you love and are passionate about and figure out a way to make that create change.
I love that. Do you have anything to add?
I do. I'm so glad you asked. My one thing I love to tell young Black girls is there is space for you. Mm. Young Black men, young Black boys, young Black people, there is space for you. If with the sheer amount of people, business, money that exists in this world in today's day and age, it makes absolutely no sense why you believe you can't go into you can go into an industry and it's not for you, or you can't go into an industry or whatever it may be. There is space for you. Mm. So just do it and be persistent, because you will get some no's, but when the yes comes, that's all you're going to need.
Mm. Oh, I love that. I'm going to speak to Fife because I imagine she's watching, but I don't think we have time for questions. So I'm going to go on to my final question to close on Busy Being Black. I ask all of my guests the same question. I think it's very revealing. What do you hope for? I think that you've made clear what you hope for in the world. So let's focus on you. What do you hope for?
Oh, gosh. I hope that everyone has access to the opportunities that enable them to level up in their lives, whatever way that is. Everyone wants to level up in a different way. I want everyone to have access to that. I want everyone to have access to joy and fulfillment and satisfaction and the least amount of stress possible. That is what I hope for. That's definitely what I hope for.
If I could start working, that would be fabulous. Yeah. I wasn't designed to work.
Toby, and a dream of labor.
I don't dream of labor. Toby, what about you? What do you hope for?
So mine's a little bit twofold. I believe everyone should have access to technology. It rules our world like no other thing has done before. So for the fact that there are people And a lot of the time, people, when I say this to people, they think I'm talking about third world countries that are looking for wells and running water and don't have any light. There's that. And there's also people in kind of the biggest economies in the world that don't have access to the technology they need. So everyone across the board having the access to technology that they need, for one. But personally, I hope for the ability or the room to be able to create the change that I want to see. Because I think running this business and also doing the laptop scheme, the business has allowed me to have the laptop scheme. Right. I want to have the laptop scheme survive on its own accord. And I want the laptop scheme to do way more than 200 plus laptops in 7, 8, 9 months. I want everyone who comes to us, who requires a laptop, who requires a device, who doesn't have access to technology, whether in a creative or technical, you know, we're limiting at the moment just so that we can service everyone that kind of we can. But I want everybody who needs a device to be able to get one, because there are countries that do it. There are a small number of countries that provide this kind of service.
The ones that don't hate their citizens.
The ones that don't hate their citizens and aren't trying to take people down. But, you know, people that use taxes properly. Yeah. But I want that to be done properly. And if I kind of kick it off with something small and it grows, so be it. If somebody else does something that makes this the hope that comes to fruition, so be it. But that is what I hope for.
Black Tech Fest takes place annually during Black History Month here in the UK and exists to inspire and create space for powerful conversations around technology, inclusion, and innovation. You'll find more information about Toby Ajala and Yasmina Kone in the show notes, including how to support TechT's device scheme and Beam's crowdfunding campaigns for those experiencing homelessness. Busy Being Black is the podcast exploring how we live in the fullness of our queer Black lives. Thank you to our partners, UK Black Pride, Blackout UK, The 10th, Schools Out, and to you, the listeners. Your support of Busy Being Black means the world. Please do rate and review the show and tell others. The more you do, the more people like us get to hear the stories and voices amplified here. And finally, thank you to my friend and co-conspirator, Lazarus Lynch, a musician and culinary extraordinaire based in New York City, for creating Busy Being Black's triumphant and ancestral theme music. I'm so busy being black.